This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. A mother of two in Phoenix, Arizona, has become one of the first undocumented immigrants to be deported under Donald Trump's disastrous regime. Guadalupe Garcia de Rios had been required to check in with federal immigration authorities once a year since she was determined to be undocumented. As part of President Obama's assurance that he would focus on deporting only dangerous criminals, Garcia de Rios had been allowed to remain in the U.S. with her children, who are citizens. But when she dutifully reported to the ICE office in Phoenix last week, she was swiftly returned to Mexico, a country that she had left 21 years ago. And on the same day as she was deported, reports emerged of 100 or so undocumented immigrants being rounded up in raids by ICE agents in Los Angeles, California. It appears that the promises of mass deportations that Trump made to his supporters, which many didn't take seriously, are coming ferociously true. Immigrant rights groups have vowed to fight back. One such group is Voces de la Frontera in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which has planned a day without Latinos, immigrants, and refugees on Monday, February 13th. Christine Newman Ortiz is the executive director of Voces de la Frontera. She now joins me. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thank you for having us.
So before we get into what you have planned for Monday, let's talk about the case of Guadalupe Garcia de Rios. This was a heartbreaking case. A lot of folks had rallied around her case. Can you explain what exactly happened to her? How it was that between presidents, one president had said it was essentially said it was okay for her to remain here under Trump. That changed with no warning.
This is an expression of the start of the implementation of Trump's executive order on internal enforcement, by which he stripped away the enforcement priorities that had been won by the immigrant rights movement under the previous administration. Under the Trump administration, any person who is undocumented is considered a threat and someone to be a priority for deportation, because it is so broad. It has also included another piece in there in the county jails, where it would again take away the national enforcement priorities. So for, you know, driving without a license, minor infractions, innocent of a charge if you process through the county jail, that would be another conduit of the mass deportation machinery. And then lastly, one of the pieces has also been encouraging local law enforcement to join the federal 287G program, which is a very discredited program because of its record on constitutional violations, civil rights violations. It essentially legalizes racial profiling of people and turns local law enforcement into immigration agents, which obviously creates tremendous fear of law enforcement and has been a disastrous program. So that's the difference. We are seeing that this is real, that here with Sheriff Clark in Milwaukee saying he wants to enter into this program, we see it as another key battleground, initiation of this battle. The resistance that we saw surrounding her deportation is an example of the kind of resistance that that is being expressed, as we saw with the first wave against his unconstitutional, discriminatory civil executive order against Muslims, that the resistance was there, and we're seeing that again. So Day Without Latinos, Immigrants, and Refugees in Wisconsin is a general strike against the implementation of 287G. What we saw in Arizona of the civil disobedience resistance, this is the initiation of the resistance against the internal executive order on immigration.
Right. And I'm so glad you brought up the important resistance in Phoenix, Arizona. A number of folks surrounded the ICE van, locked themselves to it, refused to let people pass. Of course, there were arrests, and they themselves are likely going to be facing some serious penalties for what they did. But at least the fact that people are, you know, didn't let Guadalupe go without a fight is a pretty strong indication. Now in Los Angeles, where we are based here, we saw and got reports of ICE raids happening in communities, you know, ICE agents going into people's homes, but also workplace raids. Didn't we see this during the Bush administration, Christine? We saw it under Obama, but not as frequently, I think, under Bush. We saw these workplace raids. Are we going back to that era where people are afraid to be in their own homes, or afraid to be in their own workplaces?
I mean, absolutely. I think what we're seeing, like in the raids in California, and there's been uptick now where people, again, it's like collateral damage. They come into a home, they start questioning people. The fact that you're undocumented, regardless of your record, of your ties to the community, to the family, you're being put into deportation. So we know the whole agenda is to really... really have a racialized state government that is imposing this kind of aggressive assault on people of color and against the immigrant community. So it's the machinery is there. I will say under the Obama administration, there was a continuation of the Bush administration, and it was only due to the pressure from the immigrant rights movement to really call the question around someone who ran on an immigrant rights platform to use his executive power largely because Congress was blocked and Democrats didn't move it when they had the chance to push back on this kind of broad, broad policy where people were being picked up. And so, I mean, under the Obama administration, we had the highest, deportations of any other president. What we're going to see, though, under the Trump administration is another ball game. And that ball game is we're very clear that you have a administration with people in influence and key positions, such as Sessions, Bannon, Kobach, who have ties to white supremacist hate groups and who really are implementing an agenda, an aggressive agenda of racial, legalizing racist politics based on if you have an accent, if your English is limited, how you dress, what the color of your skin is. And that's been the history of 287G. And that's what's going to get what they're trying to implement broadly. And we really, in the same way there was strong resistance to the executive order against the Muslim ban or depending on refugees fleeing from certain countries, then the same kind of resistance. And I think the use of the general strike has been a tool that the immigrant rights movement has used over the years, and we're ready to use it again.
So before we talk about what you have planned on Monday, particularly in Milwaukee and other Wisconsin cities and how that could be replicated, how important is it, I want to pick up on what you just referred to, how important is it for us to have solidarity between the various immigrant groups under Trump? Because in the past, you know, we've had people working on the rights of, civil rights of Muslim Americans. We've had undocumented folks and the Dreamers do their thing. But it feels as though now we need to kind of consolidate and express solidarity and present a united front to Trump because we're all under attack.
Absolutely. I know that here in Wisconsin, after the election, we convened the Wisconsin Network for Immigrant Refugee Rights, and there was a decision to broaden that coalition to include a much broader representation of groups that are being directly impacted by the Trump administration. But I will say, and I know this is true nationally, that what has particularly brought us together has been the connection with the Muslim community and the immigrant rights, Latino, Asian, undocumented immigrant rights movement. There's been very strong connection. And obviously, like with the Women's March, we know that everyone is being targeted in terms of the legacy of civil rights struggle, and the gains that have been achieved for decades are really under attack. We're going to see attack on workers' rights as well, Act 10 going national. And so that is the one good thing that's coming out of this, and that there is a very strong commitment to people to resist. And so, for example, this year, Day Without Latinos, Immigrants, and Refugees is what we're calling this statewide community general strike, to include the voice of the Muslim community, which has been so aggressively under attack and has really stepped up, and where we've really been able to unite. And we use this as an opportunity to give space and voice so that the largely Latino immigrant rights movement can hear the voice of Syrian refugees, can hear the voice of the Muslim community that will also be targeted by these policies that discriminate, try to legalize discrimination and to roll over our constitutional and civil rights. And so it's an opportunity to get to know each other better and to recognize that we're in this struggle together.
Now, Christine, Trump also signed a series of executive orders that were focused on drug violence, Mexican cartels, and vowed to basically give law enforcement greater authority to crack down on crime. All of these things, of course, at a time when we are seeing lower rates of crime than we have in the past. We seem to be returning back to those days where the tough on crime approach is something that politicians feel is valuable to them. And of course, we know in the end who's going to pay the real price. What do you make of this idea that the drug cartels, who of course victimize the very people that Trump is victimizing, undocumented immigrants, and will continue to victimize, they're the bogeyman that Trump has decided to single out. And then the law enforcement reaction will impact the most vulnerable people in this community.
Absolutely. The 287G program is a perfect example of that, that he's trying to paint a picture of immigrants as a criminal element, a threat, when in reality, 287G, which turns, in this case, the sheriff's department, they want to become, the Sheriff Clark wants to turn his officers into immigration agents. We've seen that played out in other counties where that's been implemented. And the only consequence of that is that you actually create more fear, more insecurity, and more crime, because people are afraid of law enforcement to report a crime, to be part of an investigation, because here in Waukegan, Illinois, 287G was implemented several years ago, and a case of a woman who was reporting a domestic abuse situation, and when the police came there, they ended up interrogating her about her immigration status, as opposed to when she had reached out for help from them. And so if you have family or, children, it creates fear. And not just like in this case, the sheriff's department, that fear would then extend to the local law enforcement, even though by and large, most police departments, city police departments have already taken a strong stand against this being turned into immigration agents or trying to eradicate their current policies that say, we are going to not inquire about immigration status because our role is public safety. Our role is not to be an arm of immigration. And only under certain circumstances, would they inquire into that. That's been one of the things that Trump has been threatening local government, which very specifically extends too to local law enforcement, because that's really his goal, to really turn them into an arm of immigration. And there has been that resistance. And with the threat of saying, well, I'm going to pull your federal funding if you have any policies of any department. And then, of course, that extends to the police. So this is something that, in reality, we know that immigrants have lower rates of crime, and in general, you know, it's trying to paint, it's stereotyping.
Right, we've seen studies that have shown.
We've
seen studies that have shown that immigrants in a population actually lower crime rates because immigrants are less likely to actually commit crimes than U.S. citizens. Christina, I want to spend time to discussing A Day Without Immigrants, Latinos, immigrants, and refugees. Tell us what you expect to happen in various Wisconsin cities on Monday, February 13th, and how you hope that that will be replicated elsewhere. And will you also be building up towards May 1st, which some people have talked about organizing a national day without immigrants for May Day?
Exactly. Well, I mean, we anticipate tens of thousands of people participating. We know that workers are coming from across all industries, including dairy, in restaurants and supermarkets. Factories that people, as they did last year and successfully defeating a state anti-immigrant bill, in this case, we know that people have heard the warning, that they recognize the threat, and that cannot allow 27G to start here in Milwaukee, because if it starts here, it's going to spread to other counties. Like we said, we cannot normalize what is a gross violation of our rights. So there's this recognition that it cannot grow, that we have to draw the line, and also a whole pushback on what we have seen as now an uptick on his executive order on internal immigration enforcement. So we know that there are tens of thousands of people. We easily anticipate there are over 25 cities alone from the state of Wisconsin coming to Milwaukee County. Of what we know right now, there's in the 10 days that we've, you know, leading up to Monday that we've announced this, we know there are like 40 small businesses closing in the city. So we know there are many other businesses closing throughout the state. So easily can say over 100 that we know of that are closing, and the families taking their kids out of school. It's a day of no consumption, so we're asking people to not make purchases that day, because as we saw last year and as we saw in 2006 nationally, when immigrants pull back their work, their businesses, their consumption, it sends a very, very clear message that immigrants are a positive and necessary contribution to the well-being of our economy, that jobs, our tax base, depend on the contributions that immigrants make. And we've seen only solidarity grow in the last 10 years. So we know that it's going to be a strong action. We consider it the start, not the end, but we have gotten such a fantastic response throughout the country. I know that one national network, OSICHA, another national network that we're part of, FIRM, have called on May 1st as another national general strike. But I will say this, we are asking two things of people. One is that on February 13th, if people are regionally nearby and can make it to join us, we have also created a national petition where people can send messages to Clark's office, because even though he says, you know, obviously, what is he saying now? He's saying, I won't be joining you. I'm going to be working on ICE on implementing this program. We know that the fact that he's even responding means that we are being heard. And so we have to keep the pressure up and nationalize it. So one is through this online petition and calls on our website. And secondly, is that we are inviting people to contact us so that we can organize strongly a national Day Without Latinos Immigrants. And again, that extends to everybody else, but that being led by the people who are being directly impacted. But this is a broad alliance, and we are so grateful for that and need it.
Well, I want to thank you so much.
Extends to all.
I want to thank you so much, Christine, for joining us today. Very quickly, what's your website?
It's vdlf.org.
That's
on Facebook.
VDLF, which stands for Voces de la Frontera. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Christine Newman-Ortiz is the Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.